Today, the biggest bubble in history with Harry Dent. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined again by Harry Dent, author, economist, and frankly, guru. Hi, Harry.
Hi, Martin. Good to be back.
Hello there, Harry. Great to see you again. And we're in a world of bubbles, aren't we?
This is the greatest bubble in all of history. Hey, the South Seas bubble was bigger, but it wasn't global and it's only a few rich people in England, you know. This is everything. It's real estate, it's bonds, it's stocks most of all. Stocks get the biggest kick out of quantitative easing, you know, and then real estate and bonds. And but it's everywhere. It's emerging countries, it's developed countries, it's even 2007, the real estate bubble was more in just a few countries. Now everybody, I don't know any country of stature that doesn't have a substantial real estate bubble. And of course, we know that Australia rates number two only behind China and slightly ahead of Canada.
Right. So Harry, the question for me is, if the central banks around the world just go on throwing more and more liquidity, in other words, more petrol on the flames, as you were, this bubble, it seems to me, could go on a lot longer than perhaps we were thinking originally.
Well, it's already gone a lot longer than I thought originally, and they do keep doing more. But here's what I've been warning, that there's a point where they have to print so much money that it looks ridiculous, and they kind of lose credibility. And what I'm quoting two important numbers to people today. They just printed almost as much money, $3.4 trillion, in less than 8 months. In the Federal Reserve in the United States, and of course, central banks around the world multiply that by times four or something, but then they did in 6.5 years for the whole quantitative easing cycle to get us out of the 2008-09 Great Recession. And it's 8 months. So they're having to print exponentially more. And on top of that, we had a $1 trillion annual deficit already, which is 6% of GDP. That's a lot too. And they just added $3 trillion to that, and they're looking to add more. So this is, you total it all up, 6, 7, 8 trillion, 30-40% of our GDP to print in a short period of time just to get over the COVID crisis. Are you kidding me? It shows how weak the economy is. And in any, whenever you have an artificial habit, like I always say, these are financial drugs. Lowering interest rates is a minor, like coffee. Quantitative easing is like crack, you know, or cocaine or something. It's very powerful drug. It takes more and more to keep getting high, more and more to keep from coming down until you die of the drug, until you literally fall on the pavement and die or get dragged into rehab. We're going into rehab in the next 2 years, by the thing. We just, and look what we got from this. Yeah, we got another stock rally to new highs, but barely for the S&P 500, only retesting its high. I mean, compared to the stimulus before, every rally gets less. So it takes more and more QE and fiscal stimulus to get real estate and particularly stocks to go up less and less. That's a classic drug scenario, exponential scenario that is not sustainable. So I think they've just passed that point where, okay, what are they going to do next? So, okay, are they going to print? And I think we're going to have another crash into the election or just after the election. I'm betting on into the election. I think there's a good chance stocks are peaking in this time frame, could be early next week. And if we get a crash in election, then they're going to do something even more extreme. And it's going to get to the point like, okay, well, okay. So if it's, you know, 3.7 in 6.5 years and then 3.4 in 8 months, are you going to print like $5 trillion in 2 months? I mean, you know, where does it get where even the markets and the smart money say, we better run. The truth is with any bubble, any market, is that it's the smart money that decides when it's over, not the everyday investors. And I've shown in recent months, the dumb money is just on fire. The most put option, I mean, call options bought by small traders. You can't even compare it to any time in the last 10 or 15 years. It, way more than in the 2007 top or the 2000 top. The dumb money is piling into this. Like, they're finally convinced. In Australia, people are convinced there's no way you can go wrong buying real estate, because that's the big bubble there. Your stock market has no chance of making a new high. And if it doesn't make a new high, it's going down and real estate will follow. But China, what's killing me is that the Chinese are now, they've always been already been the most aggressive buyers of real estate, happy to lead by a second or third home, leave them empty, total speculation, no income, and have 22% empty homes in their cities, which there's no way Australia, Sydney or Melbourne or Manhattan or San, any major city I know in the developed world would have a real estate bubble with 22% empty real estate. But that the Chinese think you can't go wrong buying real estate because they've never had a real estate bubble before. They never owned real estate before because they were in a communist country. And they are now more convinced than ever, now that the stock market's already crashed big time. The stock market in China is about half of what it was at its peak and getting ready to go down to damn, you know, 500 or 1,000, almost nothing. They're so convinced with the stock market so much down that real estate is the only safe haven, and they're buying more than ever. I'm just like, oh my God, these poor people are going to get slaughtered, Martin. I mean, more than Australia. And 78%, it was 74 last time I reported, it's now 78% of Chinese net worth is in real estate. It's 67% in Australia. It's only 30% in the US and in places like Europe. So that's why your bubble is the greatest. People in Australia just believe in real estate. And you know what? You guys are new kids on the block. You became a developed country only in the last so many decades, doubled your GDP per capita, short period of time, just like Japan and Taiwan and South Korea and Singapore and Hong Kong and now China, double or more your GDP per capita, short period of time. People get rich quick, which means they stop having babies and they buy real estate like crazy, and they're newbies, they're nouveau riche. They haven't had a real estate bubble before. And Japan came first, and there's bust, and everybody's looking. Nobody's thinking, well, Japan had a big bubble in real estate. They were the first to have a baby boom, have all these things, a bubble in real estate. And their markets crashed big time and never came back. Nobody thinks, oh, well, that'll happen to Korea and Taiwan and China and Australia and New Zealand. Nobody thinks about this. Martin, this is going to go down as the stupidest single economic event in all of history, a global bubble as we started out, but particularly in China, where 22%, most of the speculation is in empty condos. I mean, in the U.S., people are standing in line to buy. In a city, they're standing in line to buy. China, they're 22% empty, and they have the greatest bubble. They have to pay 11 times. I think it's 22 in Hong Kong. That's median. If you go to average values, it skews to the upside. It's 39 times in Hong Kong, you know, and 20 times in Beijing. This is insanity. And Sydney and Melbourne and Vancouver are the next strongest bubbles in the world. And nobody in any of those places think this bubble can burst. And that's the definition of bubble logic and absolute human greed and delusion. Because what my view, people say, Martin, how can people be so stupid in bubbles and not see them? What's more obvious than a giant bubble? I mean, if a 10-foot wave was coming into the beach, would you notice it versus a 2-foot wave? Yes, you would. No, people are high on the bubble. That's why they don't notice it. The bubble makes them high. You're sitting on your, pardon my French, fat ass on your couch watching a 75-inch TV that now is $1,000 and would have been $12,000 just 10 years ago. And your house is going up 20% a year, and the stock market's going up 30% a year, and you're doing nothing. Who would want that to end? Who would see anything wrong with that, particularly if you're more affluent and own more of these financial assets? So the people, I have a harder time talking people out of real estate than stocks, because people know stocks bubble. See that? Real estate hasn't been that many bubbles in history because you couldn't borrow against real estate until recent decades, you know? Even after roaring 20s, 50% down, five-year balloon payment. What? How do you speculate with that sort of thing? And people were not middle-class consumers. So it's harder to talk people out of real estate, but the hardest people to talk out are not the everyday person. It's the richest people I talk to who think London can't go down. It's the greatest city in Europe. It's the financial city. Manhattan can't go down. New York's the greatest city in the world. Sydney, Melbourne can't go down. It's the greatest place in the world. Those are the cities that bubble and go down. History is crystal clear on this. Greater the bubble, the greater the burst. End of story. The greatest cities bubble the most because they are so great. And then when all the free money and all the easy stuff comes down, they crashed the most. Manhattan was the biggest bubble burst in the world in the early 30s, and it was the up and coming. Manhattan was like Shanghai today or Hong Kong. The new emerging country becoming developed, becoming rich overnight, hot new city. Manhattan crashed the most. And everybody would say, this is the greatest city in the world, the future. So yeah. I worry about the most expensive places.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, Harry, because there have been some very important early warning signs now in the local markets here in Australia, and particularly property. But one of the ones I'll call out specifically is the new CEO of National Australia Bank, one of the big four banks here in Australia, Ross McEwan, came back from Europe, from Royal Bank of Scotland, right, just took up the reins. Last Friday, he actually said, as part of his latest results briefing, was there are people who actually should be selling now, because if they don't, they're going to actually end up in critical financial issues later, right? He's the first of the big four bank CEOs to recognize that this party is vetting very late into the evening, right? First point. Second point, mortgage stress now higher than ever, right? And that's true of mortgage stress, rental stress, and property investor stress, so you can see it wherever you look, right? And yet, we still have the newspapers full of, great time to buy property. Everyone's piling into Queensland and buying property virtually.
You can't go wrong, yes, yeah. Yeah, I heard that people in Melbourne were moving to Brisbane. Or to Queensland or whatever, the beach areas or something.
They're buying it online. They're buying it online unseen because they think that, it's the place to go. Now, I don't know how much of that's going on. I suspect it's nowhere near as much as all the agents are claiming, right, from what I'm seeing. But it's just remarkable how there's this gap between reality, which, of course, you keep calling out quite rightly, and, my data supports it, and the perception that's still out there, right? And it's being driven by the media, who, by the way, here are definitely hand in glove with the real estate sector. In fact, many of the real estate portals are owned by the media.
You cannot listen to anybody in the industry. I used to debate with Mark Bortz. I love him. He's a nice guy. He's a smart guy. But he's in the industry. You can't ask him if real estate's a good investment or if it's overvalued. Nobody in the industry. He told me what he would say when I would debate him in the past. He'd say, well, Harry, I could see how it might not go up much more with slowing demographics and high prices, but there's no way it can go down. And it's just, every bubble burst. I always tell people, Martin, if you can show me one bubble, and these bubbles make any bubble that I've seen in history look like nothing, any bubble that goes up like this, like Sydney real estate or the stock market in the U.S. or, whatever, on and on and on, those sort of trajectories, and they just planed out and held up there, it never, ever happened, ever. Maybe this is the first time with endless quantitative easing, but I don't see that. Hey, I had a quick question for you. I always like your lifestyle. I've never seen anybody measure things like mortgage stress by lifestyle. That's brilliant, because in marketing, when I was working with companies as a business consultant, large and small, marketing income demographics are nothing. Lifestyle is way more revealing. Yep. And I remember the last time I saw your indicator, it was some of the richest, higher end lifestyles that had the highest mortgage stress, not the everyday person. Now that vibes with what I see. The high-end real estate is the most overvalued, and these people are having to stretch more than ever, and they think they can't go wrong, and they just do it.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what we're seeing. So those more sort of affluent groups tend to have multiple properties, so that, you know, they'll own two or three and have some investment properties, right? And interestingly, we're now seeing structural unemployment coming into that sector of the market. So people who were in big jobs, very secure jobs, are suddenly finding those jobs are much less secure. Plus,
yeah, so rental, white collar guys are getting hit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. Middle management and above, you know. And the other point is that the rental take is dropping. So in Tasmania in the last quarter, the average rent dropped 9%. Right. So the point is,
that's unusual. That's scary.
Huge.
Because rents tend to hold up, you know.
Yeah. Well, no. Rents have been
hard to buy.
Yeah. Rents have been coming down. And so if you look at it, we've now got these more affluent households looking at their portfolio thinking, well, there's no capital growth. In fact, we could be going down. The cash flow is not sufficient to service those properties. And of course, a lot of them are cross-leveraged, right? So in other words, you take the equity out of the first and you buy the second and the third. So this stack of dominoes, right, is now starting to fall. And I'm seeing, if you look at it from a bank perspective, bank portfolio perspective, their exposure to that sector of the market, right, is so much higher than any other sector, which means that, of course, once you start seeing the top market going and those more affluent people struggling, it just flows down through the market. And that's what people don't get.
Well, you know, right now, I mean, our stock markets, the techs made new highs, which I predicted would happen because they never violated their lows and they never actually even hit the top side of their channel either. But everything else violated their lows and stuff. But, you know, even with that, most sectors are not. The financial sectors are sucking wind, are not participating. It's the tech and the healthcare leading this rally because they're benefiting from this virus. But in a lot of others, energy and stuff, but financial sector in particular is weak. And I remember a friend told me many, many years ago, says, Harry, the stock market in Australia is not like the S&P 500 or something in the U.S. It's not as representative of the broad economy. It's dominated by three or four giant export, you know, resource export companies and three or four giant banks. And so we know that the commodity sector has been under pressure for a long time, and the banking sector has. Your banking sector has, what I hear, at least 75% exposure to real estate, commercial and residential. The U.S. isn't that high. Our net worth is not that high in real estate. So you guys are really exposed to this real estate. But like you say, if this house of cards starts going down, and I agree with you, the last time it was the bottom, real estate led our crash in the U.S. and the world last time with bad subprime mortgages to everyday people, bad loans, everyday people. Let it, and then it moved to the upside. This one is starting everywhere I look around the world, London, San Francisco, Manhattan, Sydney Mill. It's starting in the high end and working down. You're right. That's more dangerous because those loans, those people are more leveraged and in higher mortgage stress and they're bigger loans and boy, and then it just.
Yeah. And to tell you something else that's interesting, the banks have just been reporting and we had two banks who basically paid low dividends because the regulators told them to pay less, but they're paying dividends. But one bank in particular, Westpac, which is one of the biggest, most leveraged to property, didn't pay a dividend, right? And they disclosed that their mortgage delinquency rates over the last 3 months have gone like that, right? Not just in Western Australia, but across every state, right?
Every state.
Yeah, and so what they're actually indicating is that the pressure on, you know, the mortgage book is there. And they also made the point, they've phoned about 85% of households who've been on mortgage repayment holidays, right? And they basically said, well, there are some which are coming back, but there are a lot which aren't. And then if you go back to what I said about what NAB said, which is, well, maybe some of those people should be selling. You know, the signs are all there, Harry. The signs are all there. And yet we still have everybody, you know, major analysts saying there's nothing to see here. You know, the banks are fine. Well, everything's going to be perfect.
It may go down. They always say, it may go down 10 or 12%. Look, bubbles don't correct. Yeah. They burst. Real estate bubbles burst 30 to 50 and stock bubbles burst 70 to 90. When you're in a bubble like this, you've got, I mean, long-term normal bull markets and stocks burst 50, like in the 70s. That was a 14-year bear market down 50%. But the 29 to 32 crash was 89%. And same thing. I mean, real estate only went down 26% in the U.S. in the Great Depression because real estate did not bubble anywhere near stocks because you couldn't finance real estate like you can today. But today, my God, here's what I saw. We already went through this great recession with foreclosures and stuff. Our real estate on average only went down 34%, okay? And major people thrown in the streets, lost their houses, foreclosures. Now, real estate by my indicator back then, which agrees with yours now from different point of view, but same 40% overvalued in Australia, U.S. was overvalued by about 20% in 2006, and it went down 34%. Because you're always going to get a bigger reaction. You don't go down to fair value. You go below and then eventually come back. Well, it's 40% today in the U.S., which means I'm telling U.S. people, in the U.S., we could see a 50% correction on average, which could mean 70% in high-end sectors or commercial and 30% and less. But Australia, I have the same number. I have about 40, 42% overvalued. That means a 50% correction. There is no way Australia's banking system can take that. Nobody in Australia. So that's what these kind of officials, you know, bank CEOs and politicians, they'll say, yeah, maybe it could go down 10 or 15%. And I wouldn't sell my house if I thought it was going to go down 10 or 15%. Of course, no, this is a bubble. And if it does burst, unless I'm just dead wrong and you're dead wrong and it doesn't burst at all and stays in heaven forever, like Mark Boris was saying, it's going to be 30, 40, 50% or more. That is so much worse when it happens to real estate, you know, Martin, because people borrow money against real estate. Only traders borrow money to speculate in stocks, Martin. Everyday people don't borrow to buy stocks. They borrow 80, 90, even 100% in these times to buy real estate. So real estate goes down 20% and most people have lost all their equity.
Yep.
You know, they're underwater after that. So yep. it's real estate bubbles are more damaging to the economy than stocks. People thought the stock bubble in 29 to 32 is what killed the economy. No, the U.S. had a massive farm bubble. People just kept investing in farms and growing farms after World War I when they suddenly were needed by Europe. And they kept doing it in the boom, even though Europe came back online. Massive overcapacity. It was the farms going under that killed the banking system. But it wasn't the residential housing was in a bubble. Farms were in a bubble and farms crashed. And that's what created 25% unemployment.
Yeah. And Harry, the point there, you know, when you think about the mortgage, right? So if somebody puts 10% in, right, and the bank gives them 90%, right, the risk is not equally spread between the two organizations, is it? Right. The individual and the bank, right? The first thing that goes is your equity, right? And then, of course, if prices fall further, then you're in hock to the bank. And even if you sold, you wouldn't get out. And in Australia, we have full recourse, right? So even if
we
you
don't
sell,
have that in the US. I know that. That's terrible.
Yeah. So what that means is even if you sell the property and you get some money and you pay the bank back all you can from the property, if you still owe more to the bank than is blown out by that repayment, you still own it to the bank and they can come after you.
Your credit is devastated forever. And if you ever do make money again, you owe the bank the money.
Yeah. So effectively,
that's even worse than the U.S.
Yeah.
The bank tends to have to ultimately now in the Great Recession, the government suspended marking the mortgages down to market and loans down to market. So they didn't have to do that. But at some point this time, I think they're going to have to do that. The banks, I've told people in the U.S., literally some people say, well, Harry, I got two houses. One of them I got, you know, I almost paid off the mortgage. The other one's got 90% debt. I should sell the one with the debt, right? I said, no, in the U.S., sell the one with the high equity because the bank is likely to have to take a big piece of that. That's not true in Australia. On the other hand, Martin, I would not be surprised. The crisis gets bad enough. The government might have to say, oops, no, we can't have everyday households taking this burden. The government may have to take it or the banking system may have to take it. So I would, if I had two houses, I'd still sell the one with the highest equity and get as much cash out to rebuy real estate and stocks after the crash and become a multi-zillionaire.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the point is, there's no doubt in my mind that at some point there will have to be that sort of intervention. So that, you know, the bank, the Reserve Bank, will have to buy bad mortgages off the banks to keep the banks afloat. And what people don't get here is that all of the things that are going on at the moment are designed to support the banking system, not individuals. So, you know, they just announced yet more incentive programs to encourage first-time buyers to come into the market and buy, right? But that's to help the construction sector, and it's to try and help, you know, the banks that...
And keep home prices up. Demand keeps home prices up.
Exactly. And APRA has basically said, well, look, you know, any people who have got interest and payment holidays, we'll extend that out to March next year now, so you don't have to declare those as bad loans, right? And the RBA is saying you can get zero or very cheap funding, banks from the RBA to support the funding flows into the banking system. Everything that's being done at the moment is being designed to support the banking system, right? But that isn't the same as supporting real estate, right? And the major mistake that people are making is assuming that the government and the RBA is actually intent on keeping property prices up, right? I don't think that's true. They are intent in trying to save the banking system, because, you know, a banking crash would be absolutely, you know, critically bad for the economy. But there's a big difference, right? And the cannon fodder in all of this are people who own properties, people who are being persuaded to buy into property, even at this point.
I know. You would think, you know, you would temper that. You know, let's at least, I mean, the best way to prevent a big bubble burst is to not let the bubble get any bigger than it has to. I mean, bubbles happen naturally, okay? There is, I call it the fall bubble boom season. Any economy, I can say, this is where it is. I said, you know, we've been in this since 1983. In the U.S. and in most of the world, but you can foster the bubble and pump it up, which is what central banks are doing, especially in the, you know, most of them, especially in China of all places, or you can temper them. And the best way, if it's going to happen naturally, okay, well, if the bubble goes up to 100 from 50, okay, then it'll fall back to 50. Okay, that's bad. But if it goes from 50 to 150, it's going to fall to 50. It's going to fall much more, and it's going to be worse and have bigger impact on the banks and people's foreclosures and personal finances and stuff. So yes, to be encouraging people to buy, to keep the banking system and the developers up, is the wrong policy. To say, yes, I think it would be smarter to say, look, well, if there are start to be loan failures, we're going to take a piece of it to help the banks and stuff. But yeah, to encourage more people to jump on a dying ship is going to look very bad in history. Well,
and politicians, you know, senior politicians have been saying that in the last month. It is absolutely remarkable but diabolical. Now, last question today, Harry. I want to come back to gold, right? Because gold went over 2000 US, right? It's come back a bit, and there are so many people who follow what we talk about say Harry's been totally wrong on gold, so how can I believe him on the other stuff? So let's just go through the gold story in a bit more detail, please, which is obviously there is a bit of a peak in the price, but actually relatively it's not done that well, has it?
Well, you know, it actually has at the right times. Gold has responded. Gold had a bigger bubble than most stock markets from 2008 into 2011. In just 3 years, it went up dramatically because of the dramatic money printing. Gold was assuming when central banks printed that much money, unprecedented, no precedent for this in a short period of time, gold was flying, saying this is going to cause inflation and hyperinflation. The reason gold collapsed, and by the way, I called that to these stupid asses who say this. We called the peak in gold and silver in April of 2011. I was 4 months early in gold, but right on the day of silver, said this bubble's peaking. And I said it's been traded in a channel between 1525 and 1800, I said, when it breaks 1525, it's going to blow. And it did blow. You know why it blew in 2013? Because Japan tripled their money printing and inflation kept going down. That assumption that money printing will somehow create consumer inflation, no, it creates asset price inflation the way they're doing it, QE, not like bank lending and consumer price inflation. When the market saw that gold finally collapse, I at 1,050 said this is a buy. It is over. It's oversold. I still said it's going to go lower down the road. I said it was going to go to 1,400 something. Well, then later I said, well, once it broke 1,525, I said, oh, now we're probably going to go to 1,800. I did not expect a new high. Sorry for that. And I wish it hadn't happened. Now, what I'm looking at right now, if I look at a number of measures, gold adjusted for inflation, which is the real thing it correlates with, at these prices, to be similar to the highest prices compared to inflation gold's ever gotten, 2,200 would be a fair price, so a little higher than here. I also have a chart I'm putting out early next week. I'm waiting to see where gold settles out here because I think it's going a little lower. I think it probably will run up one more time. Same thing if I go through the top, big top in 1980, the next big top in 2011, into this bubble, which normally wouldn't happen outside. This is the only time in history gold's ever gone to new highs after the 30-year commodity cycle peaked like it did in 1920 and 1980. But it's doing that because of, again, what did we just see? Massive money printing. So gold just couldn't resist. But again, compared to how much it rallied to the last massive money printing, it's gone up way less, way more measured. I think gold, I show gold's going to get heavy resistance at 2,200. If it breaks there, I'll change my mind. But I say, I think that could be it. And also, you got to realize, now that we've been able to watch this artificial environment, in the 2008 crisis, stocks peaked in October. Gold didn't peak until June. When the economy started slowing, gold was saying, oh my God, this is a serious recession. They're going to print money. And gold was going up in anticipation of that. Then the crisis got serious with Lehman Brothers in mid to late 2008, and they saw, uh-oh, deflation potential. Gold went running for mommy. Gold went down 33%, silver 50%. Dollar, U.S. dollar, which all the gold bugs said was going to crash to zero because of money printing and then stimulus, dollar went up 28%. What we just saw in the COVID crash, 5 weeks, 35 to 40% in most stock markets around the world. Gold went up a little bit in the early day, first week of that, and then went down 12%. Down, ended up down 12%. Now, that was better than stocks down 35 to 40, better than investment grade bonds down 20, you know. Crypto, Bitcoin went down 45%. The only thing that went up in that, Martin, was the treasury bonds. Even the investment grade bonds didn't, because the virus hit so hard in certain industries that even AAA companies all of a sudden have a junk bond. When you're, it's one thing if your sales go down 10 to 20% in a normal recession. Another thing when they go down 50 to 80 to 90% like major industries. So gold has shown that it tends to go up in the early stage of a crisis when it gets deep enough to start to be deflationary and companies and banks failing, it goes down. Now, my forecast for gold, therefore, and I'm going to put this out probably early next week, that is probably going to go up to 2,200 to be my best target, a little higher. It got up to, I think, 2,080 something recently. It's pulling back. It did look like, I've been waiting for this forecast to wait for gold to pull back. I think it pulls back to maybe 1,800, 1,900, when it's not that far from it. It's 1,936 today I saw. Goes up to 2,200 the next, could be weeks or next few months, and then it crashes down with everything else into late 2022. My target for gold is only $1,000. That may sound like a big crash. That's the least of any commodity, way less than stocks, more in par with real estate, which never goes down as much as commodity stock. Gold is still the best commodity. If you had to own a commodity, I would own gold, okay? Not silver, not anything else. But it's still going to go down because it's an inflation hedge, not deflation. It's a crisis hedge until the crisis turns to deflation. It did it briefly in 2008. I see deflation big time in 2021 and 22. And I see gold going down. And I also see gold having probably its best bull market ever after this crisis, when the 30-year cycle and the demographic cycles and all of my cycles just about turn up 2023 into 2038 or so, gold's going to have an extreme rally, not because of inflation this time. There'll be mild inflation. That's good. It's going to go up because Asians are the biggest buyers of gold, particularly Chinese and even more so Indians. And I see India leading the next global boom rally like China did this last one. And I think Indians alone will push gold at $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. But you're not. I'm telling you right now, you are not going to see $4,000 or $5,000 gold, even if they print a shitload more money, because it's taking exponentially more. Again, gold has gone up. It went up from, you know why it's gone up? The dollar went down 11%. That's how much gold went up from 1800 to a little over 2000. It just went up in line with the dollar going down, and the dollar's oversold right now. So gold did not have, it did go to new highs over this, but it did not have anywhere near the response it did when they started printing money like this in 2009 forward. So you're not going to get 4,000, and you're not going to get inflation. Maybe inflation goes to 3%. 4% is not going to 10 or 12, and you couldn't create hyperinflation if you printed $100 trillion right now. You couldn't, because it's not going to create consumer inflation. It would only blow up assets until they crash, and then it'll just crash. And assets crash faster than bank loans fail.
Right. And the critical point, isn't, Harry, here is deflation versus inflation, right? There are so many people out there claiming that this is a route to hyperinflation, but the reason you've just articulated, very few people get, right, that this is effectively not a linear relationship, but a logarithmic relationship. They'll have to create so much more, so much more, so much more to get a small movement, right, yeah, that it's going to be impossible. And therefore, we are going to see probably a deflation run. But my question for you then is, what do you think the most critical leading indicator to look at is with regard to that alert foreseeing deflation coming through?
Well, you know, it's really the stock market this time. Real estate kind of led the last thing, and then one thing, then all, when subprime loans started failing in the U.S., then people worried about junk bonds, and it spread around the world in other countries, Spain and Ireland. But it wasn't a worldwide real estate crisis. You guys didn't have a real estate crisis. Canada didn't have one on over our border. You know, it was just bad loan. There was a lot over too much loans and stuff, and too much lending, too much debt, and it started to deflate. And that's why they came in and printed so much money. They knew that we would end up in a 1930s style depression instead of a recession if they did not inflate financial assets and print a lot of money and give a lot of liquidity. Like you said, what do? They save the banks. That money printing was intended, and the Federal Reserve and central banks are not owned by the government or the people. They're owned by the banking system. Like you said, they protect the banks first. And then they, by doing that, they accidentally created, like I said, a financial asset bubble. And it was the only thing that worked. So they kept stoking the financial asset bubble, even when the banks didn't need it as much anymore to keep from failing. So, but the key thing that people don't get, Martin, deflation only comes every other generation, and particularly every 90 years on a double technology cycle I have. 1830s to 40s, 1920s to 30s. 90 years apart, and we're right on that again. Deflation comes when debt is deleveraging and when financial asset bubbles are deleveraging, because it destroys money. Banks create money 10 to 1 if they need to against loan. They put down 10%, they create 100% loan. They are creating new money. So when these loans fail, you're destroying money. Financial asset bubbles create wealth, not banking money, but wealth in stocks, in real estate equity, and bond values going up. They create artificial wealth, and then when it's destroyed, that wealth disappears. The disappearance of debt and bubble wealth creates fewer dollars, fewer wealth in dollars, and that causes deflation. So deflation is a sign of debt and bubble deleveraging, and gold is not protection against deflation. End of story. If you think it is, you're an idiot. And real estate is not either. You know the two things that correlate the most with inflation long term, Martin? Gold and real estate. Adjusted for inflation, gold and real estate long term give you a zero return. The difference with real estate, at least you can rent the damn thing out. You can't rent out gold. So gold and real estate are the most inflation prone. And if you get deflation, they get hit.
Yeah.
So those are the two most people in China. I guarantee you, I tell the average person in China, what's your two safe havens? Real estate and gold. Those are the worst things in deflation. Other than stocks go down, inflation crash or deflation. Then stocks go down worse in deflation, but stocks will go down in any downturn in the economy that affects earnings, whether it's inflationary like the 70s. But real estate and gold are inflation hedges. If this was going to be an inflationary crisis like the 70s, real estate held up very well. Actually went up in the 70s. So gold and inflation, the two things hardest for me to talk people out of, as I hinted before, gold and real estate, people are attached, emotionally attached. But gold is like Jesus, the second coming of Jesus. It's the one true God that's always there. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. You can't destroy it. It's always got value. And real estate, you can't go wrong buying real estate because they ain't making any more of it. That is total baloney. They're going to have buildings go up to Mars one of these days, and you don't need more land. We're not running out of land to build real estate on, you know? So all of this is illusion. I look at history. I don't have any emotion. The only value I have other than I understand cycles better than most people, I look objectively at history. I let history tell me what happens or not, what does well in inflation or deflation and what causes these things. It's crystal clear. This is the greatest bubble in history. When it bursts, there will be deflation. End of story. And when there's deflation, even real estate and gold, things thought to be more safe havens, will go down. And the problem with real estate, it will go down less, about as much as gold, less than stocks, but it has a lot of debt against it. And it affects people more personally than stocks. So it's going to be really bad. Real estate is the thing people, particularly in China, Australia, and Canada, should be the most afraid of. And they're the least afraid of.
Yeah, absolutely. And Harry, you know, your warnings, I think, are so timely here in Australia at the moment. Now, if people want to, take the conversation a bit further, there is an opportunity, isn't there?
It is. On August 30th, 5 p.m. In Australia, we're having a full day. It's going to go to about 11 o'clock or so. Live stream. We did this months ago. Bringing Robert Kiyosaki, my friend in the United States. He is the best-selling personal finance author ever. Nobody's even close. Not even Susie Orman or David Bach, because he really hit a nerve with people. And he, the reason I'm bringing him, he's the only mainstream expert I know. Because we talked earlier. Mainstream people will never tell you it's going to be that bad. You know, they have to couch it and stuff. He sees as bad a crisis as I do. The only thing he disagrees with, he thinks gold will hold up better. Other than that, he sees a Great Depression-like crash. And he's trusted by everyday people. He's going to be there. You're going to be there. I tell you, you're not just the best real estate expert. The only objective, realistic person I see in Australia, other than maybe this new bank guy, you're the best real estate analyst I've seen anywhere in the world. I wish I could bring you to the United States and have your mortgage stress indicators here and bring a little insight. So we're going to have some investment experts, you know, to give you options, you know, alternative ways to deal with this. You can't sit through stocks. Real estate not gonna do well. You know, gold's not gonna save you. Bitcoin is gonna damn near zero before it rises out of the ashes and becomes Internet 2.0. So this is a unique time, and this is a great online thing. We were gonna do these tours live, you know, before COVID hit, but the last one went well. And man. If you don't sign up for this, I don't know what to say, because all you do is go to what I told summitlivestream.com and you can register. I think it's free. And if you can't make all of it or that time, you're going to get the replay right after it and you can watch it at your leisure and you can watch the speakers you want. So, I'm going to lead it off and Robert Kiyosaki is going to wind it up and you're going to be in the middle. And I we're simply bringing people on three different levels, the best experts to address this particular bubble and burst. especially in Australia. So I wish we could do this in the U.S. You know, it's really because of GoCo. The people have been promoting me there that have a good following, and you have a good following. Some other people we work with in the U.S. I don't think we'd be able to put this thing on. We would just be, you know, they'd be throwing rocks at us.
Well, there are a few missiles flying in this direction, I have to tell you, Harry, but nevertheless.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the media used to love me, but the more I criticize real estate, they don't mind the demographic stuff. They don't mind me saying stocks are going to go down. But when I say real estate's going to go down, so even the media isn't so keen on me anymore. And that's a good sign. The other thing real quick, Martin, is we are the people I work with in Australia, we are starting a unique mutual fund. This has never been done. I've spent 40 years mapping out different seasons of the economy in every stage of consumer spending by age and stuff over time. We're going to have a fund that is not this or that, large cap growth or fixed income or small caps or international or Asia or some sector, which could, any sector will do well for a while and then fail. This fund is allowed to go with the season, with the sectors. It's called the Dent Sector Fund. If you go to dentsectorfund.com, you can get on the waiting list. We will let you know. We think this is going to come out in September, but with high regulation, and boy, does Australia have tough regulation. I thought the U.S. was bad. But we'll tell you when this is coming out. I'm telling you, this is what we call a good core fund for your superannuation. And then you can add funds around it, because this is something we're going to manage the season for. When things are going to go down, we're going to be more in those high quality bonds and with cash flow positive real estate and things like that, and multifamily rentals that hold up. And we're not going to be in stocks. There's no sector in stocks that are going to do well. Some will just go down more than others. So this unique opportunity, we're only doing this to start. We're going to bring this to the U.S. probably here, but this is going to be introduced solely in Australia and New Zealand. So it's a unique opportunity at a unique time. Like I said earlier, I think there's a high chance the stock market could be peaking here in late August, very soon, and if not, by the election. So, and that is the leading indicator. As soon as you see the next stock crash starting, that's when I tell you, if you're not already serious about selling the right real estate or real estate that's overvalued, you better get serious then. That's your leading indicator. That would tell you you may have 3 or 4 months to sell your real estate or you're in trouble. Because I think real estate will hold up longer than the stock market, but it will follow it down. Mark my words on that.
Well, Harry, thanks very much for your time today. We'll put the links and things below in the comments as always, and I look forward to the 30th. I'll be showing some very brand new data in that show as well, which no one else has seen. And I'm actually having one-on-one conversations now with people who actually are trying to figure out what to do. So I'll be able to actually give some not generic feedback, not individual feedback, but generic feedback in terms of the real issues that people are actually wrestling with. And I can tell you that people are beginning to wake up to the questions they should be asking on real estate in Australia. And they're actually very much in line with your thinking and my thinking at the moment, that this is actually not
Let me give you my one little simple indicator. Mm. What was your real estate worth in 2005 to 2006? That's my most likely target in Australia, because high end and low end and different sectors and different cities and, you know, are different, you know, in different valuations. That will tell you a decent guess at your downside. And I think people are going to be shocked when they see that.
I agree.
Shocked.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. People just have forgotten, unfortunately, just how much it ran up and why it ran up. Harry, great time to talk with you again. Very important time for people to make some critical decisions for the next, not just few months, but few years. Because frankly, I think the decisions people take over the next few months will determine their future financial outcome down the track by a long way, a generation probably.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is where you become a hero. Extreme wealth, if you see this coming, and get out and reinvest like Joseph Kennedy did in the Great Depression, or zero. I mean, people are going to be shocked how much their stocks and real estate. And again, the bigger shocker, the bigger impact, I'm telling you, because we've been through this in the U.S., not as bad as I'm forecasting this time. The real estate is what hits people the hardest.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk to you soon again, Harry, and thanks for your time today.
Okay, thanks, Martin, again.
Cheers.